Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The GOP doubles down on privatizing Medicare. Good morning, everyone. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend. They call it the unofficial start of summer. But, you know, it's usually warm, not hot. People get ready to go to the beach and then they're disappointed. But this year, summer weather rolled in right on time. Hope that's how you liked it. Not heating up is the housing market. Did you hear that lead story on the newscast just now about yet another new low, 3 years now since the housing bust began? We'll have a call-in later this hour for an important group of people in that equation, renters by choice. If you can afford to buy but are choosing to rent, we will ask to hear from you. That's coming up, and we'll have David Leinhart, New York Times economics columnist, to crunch those new numbers for us a little bit. But first, if you got into the holiday mindset and stop paying attention to the news last week after the special election in upstate New York, you may have missed that that election turned largely on a repudiation of the idea of privatizing Medicare and turning it into a voucher system, as proposed by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan. And that left Republicans an immediate choice: start abandoning the Ryan plan, as a few have done, or decide that this is a core interest of the party and amp up the fight. Well, it looks like they are choosing the latter based on a vote in the Senate and what Republicans are saying in the media over the last week. For example, here is Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama after he voted yes on the Ryan budget last week. Even after the upstate New York vote, he specifically defended Medicare privatization.
They think they can scare people by saying we're going to end Medicare. And they're going to vote on it. And the vote in our Democratic politicians' mind is that we defend Medicare and all of you oppose Medicare. American people are getting too smart for that.
Jeff Sessions last week allowing Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to stay on the offensive about the plan on behalf of Democrats.
The Republican plan to kill Medicare is a plan to make the rich richer and the sick sicker.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. But here is House Majority Leader Eric Cantor on CBS Face the Nation on Sunday. Somebody was working Memorial Day weekend. Cantor here doubling down, getting ready to frame the Medicare privatization issue in a different way.
This is demagoguery. I think it is the typical Medicare sort of tactic that the Democrats are using again. And I believe the country, you know, they understand what leadership is.
So with us on this and more is USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Great to be with you.
How difficult a choice is this for the Republicans? There is obviously some discomfort in the party. Newt Gingrich trashed it as right-wing social engineering. Then he was forced to scramble back to supporting it. This Republican candidate lost in upstate New York, largely on the issue. But Senate Republicans the very next day voted overwhelmingly for the Ryan plan. So where are they?
You know, I think Republicans are totally aware that this is going to be a big issue, a big hammer that Democrats can use against them for the next year. And we know that Medicare tactics work. They worked for Republicans last year when they ran against the Obama health care law and some of the provisions on Medicare. On the other hand, I think you see two things at work here with the way Republicans have been pretty united behind this plan despite the costs that are likely. One is that I think a lot of them believe that it's the right thing to do, that you need to do something bold on Medicare to make it sustainable for the future. And secondly, having back this plan originally as part of the Ryan budget, they don't really have a choice to back away from it. They're going to be criticized for it regardless of what they do now. They might as well look like they're taking a principled stand and try to make the argument in a more persuasive way than the candidate did in New York 26, that they are on a course that Americans should support.
Here is Paul Ryan himself on Morning Edition on Thursday throwing it back in the Democrats' faces.
It would be nice if they actually wrote a budget and tried to pass a budget. I think it's more political theater than anything.
And we've been hearing versions of that a lot this week, Susan. Republicans saying, in general, like Ryan did just there, that the Democrats don't have a budget. His Medicare plan is part of a larger budget blueprint. but also saying specifically that the Democrats don't have a plan to save Medicare and the Republicans do. But I wonder, is that a true statement? I thought we spent most of the last 2 years debating Obama's health care reform, a central portion of which is the Medicare Advisory Board, 15 people appointed by the president to make binding recommendations on how to hold down Medicare costs if they rise too fast. And that was one of the so-called death panels that Republicans were saying would deprive seniors of needed care. You referred a minute ago to Republicans also using fear on changes to Medicare. So we can debate whether having a presidential advisory board say no to grandma is better than having insurance companies do it for a profit. But don't we really have competing plans for controlling Medicare costs rather than the Ryan plan versus nothing at this point?
Well, I think that's true. And, you know, one other thing to notice is some of the provisions in the Obama health care law that affect Medicare are part of the Ryan plan, because there are only so many ways you can save money in Medicare. The Obama health care law would save $500 billion in Medicare spending over, I guess, 10 years. But you can make the argument that the idea of squeezing providers, which is basically what that government panel would do, has not worked the way policymakers had hoped they work. You know, the Congress repeatedly has done this Medicare fix for doctors, increasing reimbursement rates for doctors, despite a law that was passed some years ago in devised to control Medicare costs. So it is true that there's a plan that's part of the Obama health care law. I think you could also make an argument and have some evidence that raises questions about whether that's going to save as much money as is going to be needed. When you look ahead to the retirement of baby boomers like myself.
Is it clear from what we know of the Ryan plan how this voucher would work? Because I think what scared people so much in New York 26 was this idea that the voucher would be incomplete to the cost, right? You would have to then go out in the private market and buy some private insurance plan to replace government Medicare, where everybody, just by virtue of being 65 years old, is automatically covered, and then you pay your 20%. Has anybody been able to crunch the numbers on this in a meaningful way to say the average retiree who's got, you know, the average amount of money that a retiree has in the United States being given this voucher worth X is then going to be able to afford, you know, an equivalent to Medicare private insurance plan or not?
I haven't seen a good independent analysis of this, but I'll tell you what Paul Ryan says, what Chairman Ryan says in defending his plan. He says that he acknowledges that it shifts the burden of rising health care costs away from the government and onto the seniors, right? Because the government will give you a voucher, and if health care costs go up, you're the one who you have to make up the difference or accept a plan that has much lower levels of coverage. He says that what would happen is you would see competition for those seniors shopping for plans, and that you would have something like we saw, surprisingly, with the prescription drug care benefit. You know, the prescription drug benefit for Medicare recipients has cost less than all the projections because there's been all this competition for seniors looking at different plans to get prescription drug coverage. So Congressman Ryan says something like that would happen, and that would prevent this from being devastating for seniors. But I think the fact is this would be something new. This would be a different approach to providing health care for seniors, and I don't think it's possible to know at this point with great certainty exactly how it's going to work out. And it does two things that critics cite. One is that it shifts the burden for rising cost onto seniors, and the other is it eliminates all this power. It minimizes the power the government has as a huge buyer of health care to push for lower doctors' fees or push for lower costs on medical procedures.
Right, because any senior as an individual is not going to have the clout in the marketplace versus the doctors, versus the drug companies, whatever, as the government with all its buying power has now, or that huge group of seniors all acting as a group. It also, it seems to me, would wind up with, for the first time since Medicare was enacted, seniors with no health insurance, because people would make individual choices. Can I afford to use this voucher to actually go out and buy something, or can I not? Just as we see people who don't have health insurance today, who are under 65. And so you'd wind up, it seems to me, with a lot of seniors choosing not to actually spend the money and then going into hospitals and for other care when they were really, really sick because they needed to, and then society would have to pick up the tab in one way or another anyway.
You know, that's certainly one scenario that's possible. And, boy, one of the big successes of Medicare is eliminating that terrible plight that we saw during the Depression era, for instance, of seniors who just couldn't afford medical care. I mean, that's one thing that is now not even in the memory banks of a lot of Americans, and certainly not an era we want to move back to. Now, maybe Republicans would have to endorse an individual mandate for seniors to buy health insurance.
Oh, sure. That's going to happen. But that's exactly right, because the individual mandate, whether it's under Romney in Massachusetts or the Obama plan, is intended to do precisely that, to force the people who are healthier into the marketplace so there's some of their money in the pot, and also so that when people get sick, if they're uninsured, they don't just become charity cases who are actually much more expensive to treat than if they were in the system in the first place.
That's right. And we see two interesting pieces in the last day or two, one in the Boston Globe and one in the New Yorker, about the history of this diverges from our topic, I guess, but they talk about the history of the individual mandate in health insurance and how it was a Republican idea that Obama White House adopted and then Republicans abandoned.
Right. And, of course, that puts Mitt Romney's presidential candidate in a dilemma, as you well know, but that's for another day. Susan Page, my guest on WNYC, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. I want to touch one other topic before we get to the declining housing prices with David Leonhardt from The Times and take calls from people who are renters by choice in this market, even if they can afford homes. But today there's a vote in the House on a first attempt to raise the debt ceiling. And this is going to be a matter of negotiation before they get to a final agreement, no doubt sometime in the summer. But I gather this version has no spending cuts and will surely fail. Here are Republican Congressman Jeb Hensarling of Texas and New Jersey Democrat Rob Andrews and their positions on that.
This is something that the Secretary of Treasury has requested. It's something that I think it's 100, perhaps 150 different House Democrats have requested. We don't believe that's the way to go. But I think it's important to let the president know that is not where the support of Congress is. So this will let him know that the votes aren't there and hopefully hasten negotiations.
Because what you're going to get next week is a headline that says U.S. House fails to raise debt ceiling. I don't know what global investors are going to make of that headline, but I don't think they should be reading it.
So that was Democratic Congressman Rob Andrews of New Jersey second, Republican Jeb Hensarling of Texas first. Andrews referring to the vote next week, really this week, today, as he said that last week. But Susan, can you give us the politics of this? Because the debt ceiling is both vitally important and ultimately confusing.
That's right. Well, you know, the vote they're going to have later today is not so much to pass a measure, because that's not going to happen. It's to make a point. It's Republicans making a point that not even Democrats will stand up behind what they call a clean proposal to raise the debt ceiling. That is one that doesn't call for, doesn't require spending cuts and other measures. So they're having a little fun with this right now. Things don't get serious for a couple more weeks. We know that we're going to hit irrevocably against the debt ceiling on the first week of August. On August 2nd, Treasury Department estimates. And that will be very serious business, almost everyone says. But they're not quite, this vote today is not quite to the serious part.
I've noticed that in public opinion polls, raising the debt ceiling is off the charts unpopular, like 80 to 90% say they oppose it. But Republicans are going to raise the debt ceiling along with Democrats once this negotiation is done. Speaker John Boehner has said that very clearly, that it must be raised and all the grown-ups in the room know it and things like that. Is this one of those cases where most people don't understand what the debt ceiling actually is or why it's necessary? Because it certainly sounds on its face like, oh, gosh, the government's going to borrow even more money to pay its bills. Mm-hmm. You know, and yet everybody really, really, the leaders of both parties say, no, 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 you don't understand. This is the situation we're in. We have to borrow more money now.
Well, you know, even some of the freshman members of Congress do not seem to understand that raising the debt ceiling isn't only so you can borrow more money. It's also that you can pay Social Security checks and so you can pay the troops that are on duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, it is truly a critical measure. But you have, you know, John Boehner can say that they're going to raise the debt ceiling in the end. He's got a caucus that is pretty resistant to the idea of doing that unless you have really enormous spending cuts and no tax hikes. And that's the crux of the battle that's going on in these behind-the-scenes negotiations now, because Democrats think part of the package ought to be increasing taxes on high earners, on top earners. But look at that. You know, there was this very interesting poll released last week by the Pew Research Center, which said Americans overall are more concerned that they'll raise the debt ceiling and not cut spending than they are that they'll fail to raise the debt ceiling and that'll have economic troubles. And among Republicans, by more than 2-1, Republicans feel that way. So you can see what a difficult proposal, what a difficult measure. This is not going to be something that everyone's joking now and then they'll all agree to pass it in the last week of July. There are some serious political pressures here for Republicans in particular to navigate before we're going to get the debt ceiling raised.
And I guess before you go, this is where it all comes full circle, because I heard Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, Republican leader, saying there will need to be some kind of Medicare reform deal to get a debt ceiling agreement. So do you think that's really going to be a sticking point? And are we that close to, in fact, reforming Medicare in a bipartisan way through all this combat that that's going to be agreed to by next month or July?
No. I can't imagine there's going to be anything serious done about Medicare in this particular pass-through. And in fact, it's hard. Medicare is going to require a lot more discussion and debate and consideration before it's going to be anywhere near passage. It's hard for me to imagine that happens before the 2012 elections. I think this is an issue that we're going to address in a serious way in 2013 or 2014.
All right. Well, we'll see if Eric Cantor has to climb down from what he said on Face the Nation on Sunday about Medicare reform needing to be part of the debt ceiling agreement, all to come in the coming weeks. And we'll spend some more time on the show, by the way, folks, explaining what the debt ceiling actually is and how it relates to Social Security and the war in Afghanistan and not just sort of discretionary spending. But Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, should you own or should you rent? We'll go over those numbers coming out this morning about what appears to be now a housing double dip recession, if recession is the right word. We'll talk to David Liedhardt from the New York Times. The numbers pretty striking that are out this morning, down to post-bubble lows. And one of the factors is that people who can't afford homes are choosing to rent. So we'll take calls from anyone who thinks you are a renter by choice. Are you a renter by choice? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll go over David Leonhardt's online calculator about who should rent and who should buy. Stay tuned.